insightful analysis, bold comments, friendly debates. Find all that on Roundtable, an in-depth discussion on hot topics in China, every day from 2 to 3 p.m., only on EZFM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Roundtable, coming to you from EZFM every day from 2 to 3 p.m. My name is Xiao Hua, and today we're joined by Zhou Heyang as well as Robert Parkinson, CEO of HR consultancy firm RMG Selection based here in Beijing. Hello, Robert. Welcome to our show.
Good afternoon.
Yes, that's right. And so, we said, you know, we're going to talk about some HR-related topics. And so a just-released Employment Blue Book shows that some previously hot majors actually see relatively low employment rates. So what does that tell us? And also more graduates tend to want to start their own businesses fresh out of college. So what are the things that they should be paying attention to before making that important decision? 我们今天请到了罗麦咨询的 CEO Robert Parkinson 一起聊一下大学专业选择的技巧和学问，以及呢大学生自主创业类的话题。Also, if you guys have any more questions related to job hunting, careers, employment, how to plan your future, you can ask us, basically ask Robert. And it's very easy to do that. You can join our discussion by sending us a WeChat message. 大家有什么样的问题，就业方面的问题呢，都可以发微信过来问我们的。我们的微信号是 EZFM Roundtable， 在微信的通讯录下点添加，然后通过微信号可以搜索到我们。Also, you can send us a message on Sina Weibo. 通过新浪微博也可以搜索到我们。我们的微博 ID 是轻松调频 Roundtable. So first, according to a college graduate's employment blue book released by Michaels recently, architecture is the major with the highest employment rate, and finance majors are still the highest paid. So should potential college students choose majors using these figures as a reference? Basically, after the Gaokao period, it is the time for these high school graduates to be choosing majors and choosing colleges, and that's always a time of headache for them. So, Robert, do you think that this report, in terms of analyzing what majors are hot, what majors has the best employment rate or better paid, they can act as a good reference for them?
Yeah, well, I think certainly it's a every source of information, in a sense, is a good source of information.And I know that a lot of people, I think in the millions, were surveyed for this report. So for sure, it's useful. But I think it's also important that people pay attention to other sources of information. I think it's important that people understand the what is behind the information, if there are any hidden agendas and vested interests in the information they're talking about. I remember when I was deciding what to study myself, I listened to, I had a contribution from my parents. And, you know, as a humorous way to start this, I think your parents are the very last people you should be taking advice and information from. I think it is interesting to hear how popular architecture is. But I think one has also got to see these figures in the context that, you know, actually architecture is a very difficult thing to be good at. Mm-hmm. There's a huge demand with the number of buildings being built in China for architects. It requires an innate understanding of mathematics and science and physics and with design skills. So, and it's a difficult major to get a place on anyway in the first place. So, you know, if you do graduate with this major, it's highly likely. It's no surprise, if you like, that people are going to find jobs easily. The reverse, in fact, is true with business and finance and economics. You know, it's been the major that everyone wants to study because there's an assumption, I think an incorrect assumption, that it's a kind of golden meal ticket to a highly paid, lucrative job. And I think what people have got to be doing is really thinking ahead, you know, thinking five steps ahead and thinking, okay, what happens when I'm 40 years old and there are, I'm competing with thousands of other people for that CFO position. And there's a lot of people that unfortunately have their tails between their legs at that point in their career because they find it really tough to compete. And, you know, for every CEO or CFO in a company, there are 20 people at least on the rank below. So some forward planning is what's required, I think.
I think it's a very good point that Robert just raised, because it shows that once even, you know, with a good education background or degree and you go into a good company, you still need to work really hard along those like two decades or a few decades that you're in the job market. It just, you know, that education degree just seems to be, you know, the key if you're fortunate enough to get the right job. And then, you know, it seems like competition is going to increase even at, you know, certain ages. Yeah. And also, I think it's quite interesting that architecture seems to be the top in the list, because we know that there has been a slowdown in the building craze that's been going on for some time. So I think we do often see a time lag in predictions and how it pans out and such things.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. I think you're right. I think there is a slowdown in building, but I think you've got to look at that in the context of the fact that for the last 10 or 15 years, China's been importing architects from the West or from other so-called Asian tiger nations, who've got the skills required to be putting together buildings like CW Tower 3, for example, with much more advanced operations.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that this report talks a little bit about demission rate, 离职率, so people who leave after they've landed this job. And it seems that those studying animation tend to leave their jobs the most, with 40% of graduates leaving their jobs within half a year. And also in terms of, you know, which major switch industry is the easiest, it's us, the foreign language majors, that, 45% are leaving their field of studies within 3 years of graduation. Mm. So does that mean that people there are making the wrong choices, or does that mean that those are just the industries that happen to see this?
I guess so. I mean, I have to say, I was always surprised, you know, when you talk of animation, that there would be such a big market for cartoons. I think that's huge. I think it's it's very difficult to generalize, and I think it's you've got to be really specific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, I think when we talk about demission rate, it could also mean that this person is just switching jobs, job hopping to
right.
a better one. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's this person can't work anymore in this industry.
Sure.
Unlike the language specialists, which seem to switch to other industries more often.
Well, I think if you take that as an example that you've both just used, you know, the people who study foreign languages, particularly English, as it tends to be the international language, I've always felt that they're at a tremendous advantage in this market, simply because it means you can communicate in the international business community, and it's what I would call a transferable skill.
Mm.
And it can be of benefit to move to different industries. And you will, for example, have some companies who actually want people who haven't got a previous career in their particular industry. They will see that as a benefit. For example, you know, if you look at the luxury car segment or luxury jets, you know, there aren't people who spent 20 years selling million-dollar cars in China, because it hasn't existed. So they look at people with, for example, a private banking background and experience dealing with high-net-worth individuals, great language skills, and so on. I think language skills are incredibly important. I've always felt that. And I think there is, I have to say, a propensity in China to follow a bit too closely to specific, too specialized niches. For example, you know, if you've studied chemistry, you must therefore go and work in a field to do with chemistry. That's nonsense. The fact that you've got the intelligence to study a subject like chemistry or physics or another classical form of education will set you up for careers in many different fields. And it's no bad thing to do something which has no direct relation with your major.
Yeah, I do. It reminds me of what I think it's Albert Einstein said, that education is what remains after you've forgotten everything you've learned. So probably,
right.
You know, just what you said about, you know, forget about the majors, the specifics, but what still remains in you, that ability, that smartness is
right.
probably what counts.
Right.
Yeah, and also I think it's quite interesting to look at the well-paid jobs. I think those are always good indications for students to see what they want to get into. And unsurprisingly, finance-related jobs are still the highest paid, and we don't seem to see a change oscillating there.
Yeah.
And also, it's the computer science, marketing, and accountants. These are some jobs that are the best paid.
Right, and I think in a sense it's no surprise in a society which is now highly competitive, both from the perspective of people's jobs, but also people's material wealth, that a lot of people who've previously not been so well off go for jobs that pay well. But I think, you know, it's worth also keeping in mind that, you know, money is not automatically a value of everyone. Some people value art and organization. Some people value helping other people, you know, charitable work, for example. We're born with, what I'm trying to say, we're born with a whole different set of values, and we're not automatically utilitarian or driven by money.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. And I'm also a little bit surprised that finance still end up to be the highest paid jobs, because, you know, we've had a almost breakdown of the whole system, the global financial system, because of that. And on the one hand, everyone hates banks and hates this whole money grabbing system, but on the other, they just want to get in the industry still.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if there's an oversupply problem, because we have huge amounts of students going into this field studying
and also
getting a degree.
You know, because of the financial crisis, you might think that there are tons of professionals out there who kind of lost their positions because of the crisis and are still looking for opportunities. So I don't know. Is this a saturated field, or will be?
I think it is. I think you're right. It is a hugely saturated field. But as with any field which is competitive, you know, it's competitive for finance, banking, even accountancy, private practice, or you know, within companies, is competitive because it is highly paid. And the reason it's highly paid is very simply that the people that manage your money for you, you don't want to pay them a low amount of money, because because otherwise you risk your own investments. So it's important to look after those people. And as with any business, the law, certain HR fields, certain sales fields, anything that's lucrative and people stand to do very well at is competitive.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good that you brought up law, because contrary to common understanding, this time in this report, it actually showed that law, probably for the first time, that is seeing the lowest employment rates.
One of, at least.
Yes,
yeah.
One of, along with physics, I think. So with law, I think in the last decade, we've seen an oversupply problem. Every university is opening a law school.
Right.
And now we're seeing the bad results of that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think if you look at what's happening in the private practice law firm market, you know, a lot of the foreign law firms, which Chinese law graduates aspire to work for, are now finding that they're having to pull out of certain Chinese markets, particularly the Beijing market, because they're suffering from massive competition from Chinese law firms who charge out their associates at half the rate that the US firms charge. So, you know, it's, law is seen in every country really as a glamorous, well-to-do profession. But I think the reality of life and competition is starting to bite in China. And it's also interesting, because we were talking about transferable skills and languages there. One of the reasons that people that law becomes a difficult area for people to work in is often because they don't have the English skills. They're of course fine with the Chinese skills, but when it comes to dealing with international clients, you've got to have the drafting or writing skills and ability in the English language to survive.
Exactly, and that's probably not only daily communication English. You have to really know the professional field.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'd like to quote one of our listeners who has a question for you.
Sure.
This is Jolene, and she is asking, 关于职场想请问刚毕业的大学生如何找到自己热爱的终生事业。I guess it's a very general question, but
very
it's
hard
one,
to answer.
One that everybody has, you know, when they are out of college. So how do I find the career that I will love forever? Or, you know, that will be my career. How do I find the job that I would really like, you know.
Well, Jolene, that's a great question, I have to say. And I think if you ask most people in their mid to late 30s or early 40s, you know, did you imagine when you were Jolene's age that you would be doing what you are, in fact, doing now? Most people will say, no way. I think to give you a practical and specific answer, you know, use your intuition, use your feeling, what your gut instinct is telling you, or if you want to be romantic about it, what your heart is telling you, is telling you something for a reason. So listen to that. I would say as well, try. If you're not sure, just go with whatever comes along. Try it, because you might like it. Mm. And many people have lived their careers like that. They've not marched out of university thinking that they can automatically, you know, get the job of their choosing.
Yeah. It's a little bit like dating and romance, right? You might end up with a first date, you know, or you might have to date for a lot, many times before you finally find the one.
Yeah. I mean, that's a metaphor I could spend a long time on.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have more career-related topics coming up. And this one is actually interesting as well. And it's from the same Michael's report, but it's telling us about another trend. It says that the percentage of Chinese college graduates choosing to start their own businesses has risen for three consecutive years. Also, it's found that the average monthly salary of self-employed graduates is higher than those who are not. That's a very interesting point of reference as well. So, first of all, why, Robert, do you think that it is that people, you know, now tend to want to start their own business?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great thing that people want to become entrepreneurs. I think the reason why is probably a greater level of disposable income, which is often shared amongst families, so people can, from a practical perspective, can afford to do that. I think China is producing some super bright people, particularly in the IT business. There's a chap called Guo Li, who apparently has started an app called Lianmeng, which is, you know, super successful, and that will no doubt be bought out or invested in, and he'll make himself a lot of money. I think, you know, of course, on the other side of things, people have got to consider that, yes, as a self-employed person, it may be that you earn slightly more than your peers, but as I know well myself, you also have to pay the salaries of your staff.
That's right.
Which, you know, can be a painful time of the month. So it's, you have to save a lot of what you make as well, I think is true.
Mm. And it seems like the largest percentage of graduate startups, which is 7.8%, have chosen to open educational institutions targeting primary and middle school students, according to this report.
Yeah.
So, well, one would imagine it's probably the easiest, most familiar area to get into as a business startup.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a bit at odds with this one. I think clearly there's a low barrier to entry, but I think there's also a moral question. And, you know, would I want my children, if I'm lucky enough ever to have some, to be taught by a 21-year-old running their own nursery, often borrowing, quote-unquote, the name of famous schools and universities from other countries? I'm not so sure I would. So I think this is a bit of a tricky one. I think it's certainly a moral issue. Is it possible to, you know, rent out a room, stand up and say I'm a teacher now? Of course, easy, easy peasy. Very low barrier to entry. But, you know, as with all things, which are easy to get into, they're not so easy to sustain and turn into real operations.
Yeah, I guess so. It's the fact that it has a low entry bar also means that many people are doing the same thing, and it's very hard to stand out, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. And also in terms of what choices should people be making, because I guess, you know, the fact that, oh, the monthly salary of those who are their own bosses are higher than those who are not, who are working for somebody, it might be enough to attract people to go into this field of starting their own business. But really, do you think that it is for everybody, or it is something that it would encourage fresh graduates into doing?
Yeah. Well, speaking from my own experience, having run a company for someone else for 10 or 11 years, yeah, I thought before I set my own business up, this would be easy. This would be a piece of cake, as we say in the UK. But actually, you know, it's tough, even in an industry that one is familiar with. So I think going as a fresh graduate, unless you are really something special, unless you are the next Mark Zuckerberg, and you've got a really different, unique idea which you can patent and protect, then I think it's generally a good idea to get some experience of not just employment and work, but the world first.
But sometimes, I guess, for fresh graduates, it's also hard for them to make that decision. Because, you know, at 22, you might think that you have a million genius ideas that will turn out to be successful. And you might also think that if you don't act on it right now, then someone else might steal it or, you know, or something like that. So for people who actually think of starting their own business, what are the things that they should pay attention to?
Sure. Well, good question. I think it's I think ultimately it has to come down to very practical considerations. And, you know, if you can support yourself and, you know, still honor any family commitments that you may have, then why not? You know, well, what's to stop you? But, you know, if looking at the Western world, comparing with the Western world for a minute, if you're burgeoning in student debt and your parents owe lots of money and they've lent you lots of money to study, are you then in the position where you can go and have a punt on setting your own business up? Absolutely not, in my view.
Yeah. So say, for example, the money side, how much money do you need to have, for example, to keep your company run for like half a year or a whole year or, you know, or you can start by just getting loans from the bank?
Well, I'm very anti-borrowing money, I have to say. And from my own perspective, I've never in business borrowed any money. It's always been as a result of savings. And I just wouldn't do it. You know, I think you should set a business up to make money, not to borrow it and then give it away. I guess it depends what area you're in. I think that the beauty of technology, information technology, is that really, I mean, anyone with a computer and some software who's got ideas can turn that into a business if you're intelligent enough. Yeah, so I think IT is an example of somewhere where, yes, you can take a risk. It's also something you can do part-time. Mm. It doesn't have to be a full-time venture, which can be important.
Yeah, that's right. Or probably for a lot of students, they can get the experience in the company first, learn something about management, and then at the same time try to realize whatever idea they have in mind.
Sure. And I think also it's a question of asking oneself, why do you want to set your own business up? And, you know, what's the reason? And I was talking to my colleague earlier in the car coming to the studio, and I was using the example of myself. If I really wanted to, I suppose I could stop working tomorrow and just about scrape by for the rest of my life. But, you know, I don't want to do that. I enjoy my work a lot. I'm passionate about what we do. And I think that's the criterion for establishing your own enterprise. Are you really interested from an engagement perspective in what you're doing, or is it just money that you're, you know, gazing at the stars looking to achieve?
Yeah, so you have to be really, really passionate about what you want to do, or really dedicated into that.
Exactly.
I guess also one of the reasons being that you will encounter so many challenges and difficulties along the road that you just have to be, you know, dedicated and determined at first.
You have to believe 100% that not for one second will you fail. And unless you believe that, don't bother.
Wow.
Otherwise, you'll fail. So I think for those who are interested in this, you must muster all the conviction you have to make it succeed, or the possibility.
Right. Yeah. That's some very good suggestions. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this first half hour of our show. But thank you very much, Robert, for
Great pleasure.
Sharing with us
thank
these
you.
Views. Thank you.